Hi, today is May 2nd, 2021. This is MobileViews Podcast 361. I'm Taro Gasaward, my good friend John Westfall, and I think we'd like to thank our buddy Rocco Augusto for being a guest panelist last week. That was fun and informative. I learned that you can watch Apple TV stuff on the Roku.
We have been learning a lot of things from our friends as we have had them on. So it's been a nice thing to do.
And I think that's one of the things I appreciate the most about my friends in general and our friends collectively, our shared friends, is that they are really smart people, you know, and they do really interesting things. And you can always learn from them, no matter how much you think you already know. So really appreciative of our friends who have taken the time to join us in the podcast. We have more to come in the coming months and weeks as we do our pandemic friends catch up, which has been really interesting. I thought it would be interesting, but it's even more interesting than I thought it would be. Okay.
I agree.
So catching up on a couple of things before I let John teach me about even more stuff is, am privileged
it's
to have John teach
you
me
already
more stuff.
Own, so you don't have to worry about buying anything.
I know. But okay. So here's something I've already bought, and I'm going to have to move to it. So as many of you know, as our fives of listeners know, Google Photos is going to switch from its unlimited model to a limited model starting, I think, late June or early July. And what it means is that anything you've got stored up there already is fine. So you don't have to worry about paying for, you know, gigabytes and gigabytes of photos and videos you may have stored in Google Drive necessarily, but Google Photos. I guess it will be the same thing. But after that, you will have to pay for photos and videos you upload. And I think, you know, as our cameras get better and better, if it's more than 16 megabits, will it even store? I'm not sure. If you have a 60 megapixel or more photo, I'm not even sure if it does compression on it properly. But in any case, that's going to happen. And so then you depend on whatever storage you already either free, which is 15 gigabytes, which is not much, or pay for. Now, I have Google One, and I pay for 100 gigabytes a year, not a year, but 100 gigabytes total. Each year I pay for that. It's not very expensive for 100 gig, but to go up to 1 terabyte is kind of expensive. I think it's $10 a month. And you don't get anything more except storage. You know, unlike Microsoft Office 365, where you get storage plus, you know, a whole bunch of really good apps and so forth for your desktop and your... But in any case, so the problem I'm having now is that I've been spending the last couple of months trying to learn more about Microsoft Photos in OneDrive, and it's, number one, it's dumb as rocks. It just doesn't know anything. The other day, I thought it had some image object recognition properties, but then I can't see it now, so I don't know what happened to that. It does know about locations, like, you know, places on the Earth, but little else from what I can tell. One thing I did find that was kind of funny, John, I don't know if you noticed this. Photos are stored in a folder named SkyDrive Camera Roll. And
I wonder if that is if your account is old enough to have been a SkyDrive account.
Yeah.
You know, versus when the name changed, you know, you and I have older accounts. And so I'll have to pull up one of my newer accounts and see if it has that same or not. But that is kind of funny. It's a throwback to the past.
Right. And for those who don't remember, OneDrive used to be called SkyDrive. And then Microsoft ran into some kind of copyright problem with a company called SkyDrive, I think in the UK somewhere. And so they had to change the name to OneDrive. But yeah, so the vestiges of SkyDrive still lives. And I thought it was just a vestigial folder until I looked in it today, you know, wondering where my files were actually being stored in OneDrive. And there they were. They are, if you go into OneDrive and you go into SkyDrive, which I'm going to do right now, my files, you know, versus looking at photos. And you go to SkyDrive. And it's, I have to say, it is reasonably organized within there, so it's got it by years, and then within each year folder it's got it by months, using 01 through 012. So it does organize it in a sensible way. It's just that there's the search in photos is practically non-existent. I think you can search by place and date, and that's about it. And you can create albums, but I don't even know if it has. It doesn't have, I don't think it has smart albums because it doesn't know about faces. In Microsoft, sorry, in Google Photos, you can, once it knows somebody, you can just say add this somebody to, you know, this album automatically. So if you have a, you know, child or friend or whatever, family member. Anyway, so that's the conundrum I'm now facing, is it even worth moving over to OneDrive? I've already done the syncing, so it's already syncing, so that's not a problem. And it's actually good, right, to have two different cloud providers. Actually, three, since I also have Apple's iCloud. So I have iCloud, Google Photos, and OneDrive all with my photo backup, so I feel pretty good about that. I do like the tile photos view, which is smaller thumbnails, so you can see more thumbnails per screenful, which is kind of neat. And I'll link to the show notes, the Microsoft's support.microsoft.com article about organizing and finding files in OneDrive. It's a very short article because it doesn't do much. Okay, next topic. I need John to either talk me down from the cliff or, you know, to jump off the cliff, I guess. M1 iPad Pro. To buy or not to buy, that is the question. Or to wait for an iPad Mini 6. And rumors are that there's an iPad Mini 6 that's coming. So I don't know, John.
Which one would you buy if you were to buy it?
I would buy... So I had to debate that a long time. Because the difference between the 11 and the 12.9 is only the 12.9 has a new mini... Is it LED? Yeah, mini LED screen, which is supposed to be a much, you know, sharper, darker, or more contrasty image. That's the biggest. So I'd probably buy an 11. I would not buy a terabyte or more of storage. So that means I wouldn't get the 16 gigabytes of RAM. Because I would probably buy a 256 gigabyte. Because that's been plenty of space in the past. I've bought two iPad Pros now. And both with 256 gigs. And they have lots of space left, like 180 gigs of space left. So that's not a problem. And the rationale, and the reason why I'm thinking about it, having said I'm not going to do it when we first discussed it, is I found out Procreate, I think I mentioned it last week, Procreate, the drawing tool that I use for my daily doodle project, is going to support some stuff on the M1-based iPad that is kind of remarkable. I'm not sure I'd use it, but it'd be kind of nice to have it. And I'm kind of wondering what kind of things will be announced for M1-based iPads come this, you know, June or whenever, next month already, when WWDC happens, you know, whether there'll be certain features or abilities that only the M1 will have because of its greater processing power and the fact that they're putting more RAM into the, you know, comparable iPads. I think I have 6 gigabytes of storage in my current iPad Pro versus 8 for a sub terabyte, you know, file storage device. Yeah, it's a tough one. I'm not so much interested. Oh, go ahead, John.
I say wait until after WWDC.
That's a good thought.
Because that's close enough that you don't have to worry about buying it late in the product cycle where you're going to say, well, there's another one right around the corner. I mean, it's only a month away.
Yeah.
And it's also new enough. It's also something that you could then decide, if you wanted to turn it into a beta device and keep using your old one as a stable everyday device. So you could get it and then put it on the betas.
Good point.
And try out all the new features and really just use it for doodling or something along those lines.
Right.
So I say wait until WWDC.
I think that's good advice, and I think I might do that. The one additional complicating factor is, as you might have been reading, I think I've been reading that there's a possible chip shortage that's affecting computers of all kinds and includes iPads and Macs and so forth. So I'm a little bit worried about a chip shortage making it more difficult to buy computing devices in general. But so far, I don't know. I will say that I tried to pre-order one, and it wouldn't let me hit the pre-order button, like yesterday. So, you know.
It just doesn't want you buying one.
So yeah,
it's an agreement to. It says wait until after WWDC.
And I should note, my recollection, it was pre-orders were supposed to be available this past Friday, April 30th, and yesterday was April 1. So, you know, it's not that I tried to order or pre-order something before it was available. But anyway, still thinking about it. Or, you know, definitely iPad Mini 6. I would buy an iPad Mini 6 for sure, if it were available. and it had the features I wanted. Mostly support for Apple Pencil too. So that's what I'm debating right now. I did order some of those AirTags. So I ordered a 4-pack of those and had them engraved and bought some carrying cases since there's no way to... I mean, I guess you can stick it in something, but there's no way to attach it to something without paying even more. Mm-hmm. So in that way, it's not quite as convenient as the tile squares. But I'm looking forward to it. You know, I've got some things I'd like to attach it to and play with it.
Yep, all right. That is one that I've thought about doing, but have not yet. So I probably will pick up some later this year.
Yep.
To play with.
Yep. And the shipping date is slipping on that too. So I'm going to be getting the little carrying devices that I ordered for the AirTags way before the AirTags itself, which is now I think shipping like mid-June or something. And I've been kind of impressed. And I don't use tiles. I think I bought one for my wife, but I don't use it myself. So for me, there's no switchover or, you know, wasted investments from my point of view. And you can engrave it, which is cool. So, including emoticons and stuff, which is, I thought was kind of funny. Including the poop emoticon. I don't know where you would attach that to.
Something you want to lose.
It'd be interesting to attach one to your pet. You know, if you have a free-range pet like a cat or something.
I thought about that. It would be very interesting to see how that works with the Find My network.
Yeah. And I say that because I noticed a cat, which I thought was a stray cat, running around my area last couple of weeks. And so I was putting a dish of water for it because I thought it was just a stray. And I was talking to a neighbor about it. Oh, no, that's not a stray cat. It belongs to, you know, so-and-so down the street. So, you know, it's okay to put water out for it, but it's not going to starve or dehydrate or anything. It's all great. Okay. Okay. Go ahead. Sorry, John.
So you are ready to learn about...
I am, sir.
...what I'm calling shortcut supercharging.
Yes, sir, Dr. Westfall.
So I have talked about the Siri shortcut app in the past. This app, if you remember, was the workflow app that Apple bought, I guess, about 3 years ago now and turned it into shortcuts about 2 years ago. And it's one of those apps that they mention every so often. They show you can do cool things with, but they never really talk a lot about what they're adding when they're adding it. Mm. And so I find that if I don't go in there at least once every few months and just play with it, I don't even realize it has certain capabilities and can do certain things. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the ways I've been using it and the ways that I've been adding some things to it that really I don't think it gets a lot of attention for. And so I'm going to give you some of my best ways that I've used it and mention a few apps that go along with it. And of course, a lot of this is heavily dependent on an Apple Watch because the watch is where you really don't want to be navigating around and opening up different apps and things like that. It's a little bit quicker on your iPhone, but with the watch, you can do some cool stuff. So the first thing that I'll mention is that Apple has a few of these that they've built that are just cool to add if you've never used shortcuts before. So there are three basic ways you can trigger a shortcut. You can either go to the shortcuts and tap on the shortcut and it'll run it. You can also add a widget to your home screen that runs a shortcut. Mm. You can run them from your Apple Watch, and you can also run them and hook into them from the share sheet in any given application, which is a one that they don't talk that much about, but it's kind of cool some of the ways you can share two shortcuts. The one that I'd mentioned that's kind of really useful is the edit any web page share sheet shortcut. So if you're on the shortcuts app, if you open it on your phone and then go down to the gallery tab in the lower right, and then at the top there, there's a bunch of sliding tiles. If you go over to one to share sheet shortcuts, which is a mouthful, and tap on it, I think it's down in the let me double check. Yeah, it is under JavaScript shortcuts. It's about the fourth one over. It's called Edit Web Page. And once you add it, you tap on it and choose Add Shortcut.
John, can I stop you for a minute?
Safari, yes.
I just want to tell you that I did not know you could slide those left and right.
Yeah.
So So what John's talking about is you go to the gallery, and there's, like he said, there's, you know, share sheet shortcuts. And then you see a column of icons. But what I didn't realize until he told me is each of those columns is actually also a row. So you can slide it to the left, and there's like a whole bunch of other... Anyway, I'm sorry. Okay, so share sheet shortcut, JavaScript shortcuts, and then you scroll... I mean, or you... And whatever. Then find
edit web page. Yep.
Edit web page. Okay, I'm following along.
Tap on it and choose add shortcut.
Okay. Should I rename it? I guess I can just call it that.
Yeah, you can edit, call it whatever you want.
Okay.
Then go over to Safari. So open up Safari and go to any web page you want.
Okay.
And then when you hit the little share sheet at the bottom, you scroll up, there should be an action now that's edit web page at the very bottom.
Oh, yeah.
And if you tap on that, it'll actually execute the JavaScript code that'll make the page editable, and you can go in and change the text and mark it up or do whatever you want to do. So if you are working on a project at work and someone says, hey, take a look at this, and you go, no, it really needs to say this, or it needs to look like this, or something along you can actually make that change on your phone. Or if, you know, your buddy sends you a web page and you want to have some fun with them, you could always edit the headline or, you know, change something on there and send it back as a humorous note.
Let me ask you something, John. So I did what you said, and I tapped on, I went to, you know, tapped on edit web page at the bottom, and then it shows me the Safari icon with a checkbox, and then what do I do after that?
Just tap on the web pages.
Oh, really? Okay, I tap on the web page, and then I can edit it?
You might have to – so here's what it does for me. When I hit edit web page, it then brings up a dialog that says, you know, do you allow me to do this, basically. It's asking permission. So it says, do you want to give edit web page access to this website?
Okay.
I choose allow. And then when I close the share sheet, I can go in and just start – and my background is making Todd not able to see this. But I can go in and basically – and take out things and do whatever I want to do.
That's funny.
To the text.
I like it. Oh, wow. That's wild.
The fun thing about this is it gives you an idea of just kind of the random power in Siri shortcuts. And if you actually go into that shortcut, in Siri shortcuts, you can actually see that it's, you know, running JavaScript on the shortcut input. It actually will show you the JavaScript. You can change it, modify it, and do whatever you want to do at that point.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see, you know, you can literally go in and do whatever you want to do.
That's pretty amazing.
So let's talk about some other things that you can do. Those are share sheet shortcuts. There are ways that you can use Siri shortcuts to chain multiple shortcuts together. So perhaps you don't want to do... You know, you don't have to go in every time and hit find the shortcut and all that. You can create menus in Siri shortcuts. So you create a new shortcut, and then under the item browser, when you're hitting a new shortcut, under the actions, you can just type in menu under search, and there's an option for choose from menu or choose from list.
Hmm.
And I've actually done this to create menus that are tailored to where I'm at or what I'm doing. So, for example, when I go for my walk in the morning, I have a couple of actions that I use regularly, like listen to this podcast or unlock my door when I get home or call a certain person, you know, if I talk to someone regularly. And so I just have a walking menu. And when I tap on it, I can choose, you know, call so-and-so, play the latest episode of this podcast, open the unlock the door from HomeKit, those sorts of things. Day menu is another menu I have. You can also do weekend menu. Basically, if you know that there are certain times of the day that you're going to be doing certain actions, you could automate it all so that it's just two or three taps instead of having to go digging around. That's a very fun one. Of course, if you pair this with different watch faces on your Apple Watch, you could schedule a watch face using a personal automation and shortcuts. So that every morning at, you know, 6 in the morning, your activity watch face pops up, and one of the shortcuts on there is your menu for your exercise. And then at 9 o'clock when you're ready for work, it pops the watch face over to a different watch face with a different menu and a different set of options. So you're basically getting to create your own adaptive interface based on what you know your schedule to be. Another cool thing that I am convinced the developer put in there just to be fun for himself is there's a shortcut action for run script over SSH. So if you are a geeky kind of person and you have servers that you SSH into that you might have scripts that you've written on there, you can automate that. Siri shortcuts will actually give you a public SSH key that you can then copy onto your server's authorized keys file so it can log in as you. I did find out that if you use a centralized authorized keys like I do, that doesn't easily get editable. I've had to actually use the backup of authorized keys too, which if you remember back when we first started with different key files for SSH, there were newer keys could go in authorized keys too. So most SSH servers will look at both files if they exist. But regardless of how you get your key to your server, this is a really cool way to trigger an automation, send a report to someone. Whatever you can script using Bash shell, you can then trigger over SSH. If you are one of those people like me that gets annoyed that Siri did not notice that you stood during an hour, or your watch did not notice that you stood during an hour that you know you did, and you lost your stand hour, you can actually create a Siri shortcut that will log 1 hour of stand. The way it does this is it creates a – you actually use Siri shortcuts to log a one-minute exercise, a walking exercise in that last hour, and you can, you know, kind of cheat a little bit. So you could go back and literally use this for your whole 8 hours of, you know, not standing. But I use it when I knew I was standing and just I didn't move enough, or I didn't, Siri or my watch didn't give me that hour. And then the last three tips that I have, one is that you can use Siri shortcuts to really call any URL. So if you know the URL schemes for different apps on your phone, you can then directly pop into those. One of them that's very useful is MS Office documents. So I have a spreadsheet that I track my weight in every day, and I have a Siri shortcut that pops open that exact spreadsheet using the share link from Office 365 and opens it up. I can hit it when I want to. I can hit save, and then I'm done with that. It's a lot easier than going into the Office app and going through recents and or having to, you know, dig through my folders to find it under my OneDrive. There's also a cool app if you're into data visualization called Charty, Charty. I've talked about Charty on here in the past, but Charty will actually build data visualizations using shortcuts. And it comes with a bunch of examples. It can even build, in the most recent update, ring graphs. We know of as the rings from Apple Watch's activity interface. If you particularly like that kind of visualization, you can now get Charty to build those for you. And it's an app that is really kind of fun if you just like building different data visualizations. And finally, one of the best sources if you're looking to really supercharge your shortcut game is the Reddit subreddit on shortcuts, which is just named Shortcuts. There are tons of ideas. There's a thread that's sticky that has URL schemes for pretty much every application that people have been able to crowdsource together. So if you're wondering, does this application I like to use, does it have a direct way I can pop into this or that? Or if you're thinking, I really need to get into this settings menu and Apple's preferences, but it's 8 layers deep and Apple doesn't have a quick way to get there, they've probably figured out the exact way to pop open that setting so that you can toggle it on or off. So in general, if you have never played with Siri shortcuts or the shortcuts app, I would say it's worth your time, because it is a lot of fun and it can really automate quite a bit that you never thought about on your phone.
I have to say, John, I have only used one shortcut ever, and that's the one that's already built, check order status.
Yeah.
I have never made a
shortcut. There's a lot of stuff. You know, shortcuts can read what's on your clipboard. and add it to things. So, you know, if you, I actually built a shortcut last night that'll take a tracking number off of my clipboard and add it to the deliveries app that I use, because I keep forgetting to do that. And I figure this will be a lot easier than having to, you know, as soon as I have it on the clipboard, which it'll get there pretty quickly, I can just hit this shortcut and it'll add it to that app. So it's really watching your own workflow every day and going, what do I find myself tapping 4, 5, 6 times to do that I'd rather tap once to do? Or use Siri to do. Because, of course, it is Siri shortcuts. So you can tell Siri to do any of these things and Siri will listen.
Yeah, you know, I've never, I have to say, you know, I've known about shortcuts. Like I said, I've never used it except for that one thing. And I don't know what I do repetitively every day. I've never really analyzed it. Or, you know, given it much thought, to be honest. And it sounds like I probably should. I'm still thinking about it. I don't know what I do repetitively every day.
Well, and, you know, it's funny because you mentioned that. There's also another cool thing I came across this week that I will throw in the show notes. It's kind of a freebie. But we've talked about the R programming language in the past.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of which you've written a book for, about.
Yes. Yep. And this is an R package that I did not know existed, but now that I know about it, I plan on using it anytime someone says to me, hey, can you build a calendar that looks like this? Because, you know, whenever I need to make an actual calendar, like a PDF calendar or something like that, I end up having to find a template and then having to find a template that looks good, and then it's a pain to add things to different dates. This is basically a package called Calendar, or C-A-L-E-N-D-R, that allows you to build custom calendars using ggplot2 in R. And some of the example calendars it can build are really slick. It can do calendar heat maps. It can shade special days. It can basically anything you'd ever want to visualize on a calendar, a month calendar or a yearly calendar, it can do it. And it's pretty neat. So I came across that this week and thought I should pass that along as well. Because if you ever need to build calendars, this is much easier than trying to do it in Excel or Word or Publisher. It is. And of course, then once you build the script one time, the next year when you have to make the 2021 calendar or the 2022 calendar or the 2023 calendar, you just change the parameters and hit a button and it makes a new calendar.
Hey, going back to Chardy, I have a question about it. So Chardy is an app for iOS, and I see that it's free and it has in-app purchases. Have you purchased any of the in-app purchases, like Chardy Premium, for example?
I have, because I believe it was an actual, legit, one-time purchase. And that's really what I try to do anymore. I try not to do the all the, you know, subscription ones.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, I did think it was worth a one-time purchase, and you do get access to some of their premium charts at that point. So,
well, do you know what kind of premium charts? Oh, well, you know, I guess you do, but what kind of premium charts that come with Chardy Premium? It's $4.99 for folks listening.
So, for example, they have an area chart option, which will build something that looks like that for you. So, kind of a stacked XY. Mostly what they are doing with the premium is that they're just showing you more detailed examples that you can learn from. I'm trying to think what the actual premium options are that they have, because once you've unlocked it, it doesn't really then tell you or try to get you to do more, which is nice. They don't continually bug you for more money. But yeah, Chardy's a cool one. It's definitely one that is a niche market, but if you like visualizations, you'll like it.
Yeah, and you know, I've got some low level visualizations for, you know, heart rate data and stuff like that. But I think it'd be kind of cool to, you know, have something nicer to look at. So I just downloaded a free one and see how far it takes me. And if I need to get the $4.99, well, you know, that won't break the bank. I don't drink coffee anymore, so you know that one Frappuccino that I would have drank, I'll use it to buy the premium back. Actually, Frappuccinos cost more than $4.99 these days, I think. But anywho. All right, as usual, John, when I listen to you, I learn a lot. I learned a lot today. And I guess you have your next book idea ready to go.
Yeah, I probably do at this point.
Yeah. I think it'd be a cool... I mean, I know there are other books on shortcuts, none of which I've read, obviously. But, You know, I think a book on not just shortcuts, but tools like Chardy, I think that'd be pretty cool. And maybe ways to apply those tools. Is there a way to get... I guess you can export the data without Chardy. But does Chardy do anything with the data after it charts it? Like, can it send a massage data somewhere or something like that?
Yes, technically you could do that with shortcuts. You could take the output of it and then mail it or move it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. All right. We should talk more about that sometime. Actually, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about in one of the podcasts is something I haven't tried, is, and maybe you've tried and you can tell me, have you tried the new features in Microsoft Excel that lets it take data directly from Alpha?
I have not tried that, but what I have tried in Excel that I think is really cool is the XLOOKUP function.
I don't know what that is. I don't know what VLOOKUP is.
Yeah, if you've ever looked at VLOOKUP and thought, why are you so annoying, VLOOKUP, use XLOOKUP. Because XLOOKUP works the way you think VLOOKUP should work.
Okay. I'm just gonna type it in the show notes so I remember to look it up. Literally. Yeah. Pun intended.
Yeah. I definitely recommend XLOOKUP as a better version than VLOOKUP. But it is only available in Office 365 and Excel 365. It's a newer function. It's not in older versions of Excel.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, you know, I think most of us these days do subscribe to O365 versus, you know, using Excel 2008 or whatever standalones. And, you know, I have to say, a little bit of a tangent, I guess, but since we've gone through our show notes, I am really shocked at how many things I subscribe to these days. Having resisted it for years, you know. I remember when Microsoft started going to the Office 365, you know, year annual subscription, I said, what a dumb idea. You know, I can use Word 2003 for the rest of my life. But I have come around to their way of thinking, they being, you know, not just Microsoft, but Google and all those other folks. And I have more subscriptions than I really probably need. But so far, they're all pretty useful. So, but like you, I try not to subscribe if I don't have to. I like one-time payments for my apps at least.
Yes.
I will note one thing, and I have to go check on this. I don't know if you've noticed the macOS updates in the last week or so since Apple's announcement day, but I think macOS Big Sur for M1 and for Intel have diverged. I mean, well, obviously they diverged, but in terms of version numbers. So I just got the macOS 11.4 for the M1 yesterday. I said, oh, I better upgrade my MacBook Pro too. So I upgraded my MacBook Pro, but it stopped at 11.3.
Hmm.
And So I got to go look that up, but I thought that was kind of interesting. And I also wanted to note that if you live in an area where masks are required, and I do, and you know you've been irritated by not being able to unlock your iPhone using facial recognition, well, you still can't, but iOS 14.5 using the watch to unlock your iPhone, that is the best thing since sliced bread. It is so convenient now. You know, you're walking around, you want to take a photo, you don't have to tap in your PIN like an animal clawing at the screen to try to take a photo. Mm-hmm. So really, really super convenient. You know, like I said, if you do live in an area where masks are still required, it's a super feature to have. Of course, it would have been nicer if Apple put back fingerprint recognition, but okay, you know, fine. This is next best thing, in my opinion. And quite fast, I have to say. I've been really, really surprised. I don't think there was anything else new in 14.5 that really mattered. I think there's some new emoticons or something, and emojis maybe, but I really haven't looked at those. Alrighty. Well, John, thank you for managing to fill up our time slot once again. When we had nothing to talk about. Oh, I had nothing to talk about. I will look up XLOOKUP because I have never used that before. And we will talk to you next time. We should have a special guest panelist next week, so that should be a lot of fun. Alrighty, folks. MoViews Podcast. What is this? 361. We'll talk to you next time.